Mishlei, chapter Tetvav, the 15th chapter. Ma'ane rach yashiv chema. And ma'ane is an answer. Rach, that is soft. Yashiv chema, that brings back anger. It calms down. It causes the anger to recede. Udvar etzev ya'ale af. And if you say something upsetting, that'll get someone angry. It's interesting how most people fail on this one. Someone yells at you, you automatically yell back. And if you want to calm down the situation, so the first thing you should do is give them a soft answer. I'm sorry, I didn't know that offended you. How could a person keep yelling at you? If you keep answering softly, most people can't keep yelling. Tana de Belio says, what's the pasuk speaking about? A person should always be nice in the way that he comes. He should be a chassid in the yeshiva, that he shouldn't be happy when he sees a friend of his making a mistake. And the person should be cunning with his fearfulness, that a person has to figure out a cunning way to fear his creator. And he should seek out peace with his brothers, with his father, with his mother, with his teacher. Be it the teacher who taught him in elementary school or the teacher that taught him in high school. And any person in the world, a person should admit to the truth and speak truth in his heart. And ma'ane rach yashiv chema. And answering softly will calm the other person down. And that is the way a person should behave. A person should behave a little bit with submissiveness. It's not easy. We find that Moshe Rabbeinu did it. When Korach and his men started yelling at Moshe, he tried first answering them calmly. When he saw that wasn't working, he saw the people were being swept along with them. He said, okay, at the end he said, I can't let them keep going because the Jews will be swept with them. And then he let him have it. He said, that's it. You guys are going to lose if either I'm the truth or you're the truth. One of us is a liar. Yeah?
Even before that, he fell on his face.
He fell on his face and he davened, but he tried. He fell on his face, but initially he tried and he tried again and he sent them word a last time until they said, forget it. Pasuk Beis. Lishon Chachamim Titiv Da'at. Ufi chesilim yabia ivelet. The tongue of the wise men, that will make knowledge even better. Because even when you say something that is wise, there's a wise way of saying it and a not wise way of saying it. But a wise person not only says wise things, but he is teitiv dat. He makes the wise things even better. He makes them good. And the mouth of the fools, yabia ivelet. They keep spewing forth foolishness and iniquity and bad things. A person sometimes thinks that just because what he's saying is right, therefore he is right. And it's not always true. There's what to be said for how a person says something. It's not just what he says. That's why very often when people quote an argument, you can't tell who's right. Because they're not quoting to you the way they said it. And just because their claim is legitimate, meaning you see on paper, he's claiming X, that doesn't mean the way he made the claim is legitimate. And if you walk into a store and you start yelling at the store owner, so then even though your claim might be legitimate, but you can't expect him to be open to hearing it. Maybe you're doing it in front of other customers. You want to bargain with the seller, don't do it when there are other customers there. You're harming him. Because when you're bargaining, other people are going to want to bargain too. And the same thing is true if you want to return an item. Tell him, you have to talk to him. Tell him, look, there's something we have to talk about. What you say isn't enough. A smart person not only says words of wisdom, but he says it in a manner. He makes the wisdom even better. Teitiv dat. Bechol makom, pasuk imen, bechol makom, einei Hashem, sofot ra'im v'tovim. God's eyes are everywhere. They see the bad and the good. God looks on. Notice it doesn't say God acts. It says God looks on. God sees. This is one of the basic things that we believe, that God sees. God sees everything. He sees the bad. Doesn't mean he will intervene, but he does see it. Pasuk Dalet, Marpe Lashon Etz Chaim, V'Selef Ba Shever Beruach. Marpe Lashon, a tongue. Now here, we can understand this in a few ways. One way is that if a person's tongue is loose, Marpe, from the term Rafui, Marpe Lashon, if a person's tongue is loose, and he doesn't speak in a tough manner. His tongue is, just like when we say the tongue is soft, over here we mean the tongue is loose. He's not speaking toughly against the person. It's chayim. That's a tree of life. It gives life to him. V'selef ba, but if a person twists his tongue, he speaks toughly to people, shever beruach, then it breaks the spirit, because ultimately he won't get what he wants. People who speak toughly automatically get a tough answer back. The fact that he's right is irrelevant. The person that's willing to go with the flow and try to be softer, he'll ultimately get what he wants. That's one of the reasons that women are successful many times where men aren't. Men always try to go head on. This is what I think. This is why I think it's right. This is why it's logical. So do it. And women are more willing to try and work with the person. So you think this, but how about this? And maybe let's try this compromise or that. They'll very often get much further than the man will get. It's very common that when couples get married and they have children, in the beginning, the child is 2 years old. Father says, don't touch the knobs on the oven. Child touches knobs on the oven. You're not allowed to touch on the ovens. It's dangerous. Okay, he's a two-year-old. He's going to touch the knobs on the oven. Okay, so the father says, we have to hit him. He might be right. But what happens is that the father always tries to go head-on. And part of head-on is if he doesn't listen, so you have to hit him. And the mother says, wait, let's try it differently. Let's try to convince him. So sometimes the mother changes the topic and the kid does something different. But sometimes that's the right way to go. You want to leave your grandparents, the parents' home. So the father says, it's time to go, let's go. The kid says, no, I want to stay by Safta. So the father says, no, he said, we're going now. So there are times, there are those unique times when the father does have to implement what I said goes, and you don't have to understand, you don't have to like it, this is what's going to be. But not necessarily when the kid's 2 years old. Then the mother's way is probably much better. Come, don't you remember? You left your stuffed doll at home. Let's go. Get the kid to want it. Go with him. Go softly. So men's tendency is, no, I said so. So he has to go. He says, no, I say yes. Well, I'm the father, so that's what's going to be. Head on. The Pasuk says it's a tree of life when a person has a softer tongue. And men have to learn this. That's why a smart man is also going to listen to his wife, and they're going to form a partnership. Now, obviously, there's a balance. They have to balance it out. But a soft tongue is a tree of life. Yeah.
Tree of life is a direct reference to Torah, no?
Okay. We'll get to that. So that's the other understanding of the pasuk. Amar Rabbi Chama b'Rabbi Chanina, Mat takanato shemesaper lashon hara. Rabbi Chama b'Rabbi Chanina says, how does a person get cured if he speaks lashon hara? Im tamid chachamu, if he is a tamid chacham. And he said, Lashon Hara, he speaks Lashon Hara, Yasok b'Torah, he should deal with Torah. Shenemar, and here the Medrash understands it the way you said, Marpe Lashon, the cure for the tongue, Etz Chaim is the tree of life, meaning the Torah is the cure for the tongue. You want to use your tongue correctly, and you feel like you're not using it correctly, so go learn Torah. That'll help you use your tongue correctly. If it's an Amharet, so the Gemara says, Yashpil Dato. He should be a humble person. Why? Because the Pasuk says, V'selef Ban, a person who's twisted in that. He doesn't have Torah. He's an Amharet, Shever Beruach. And his cure is having a broken spirit. he should humble himself. Lashon Hara stems from a person being proud. Rabbi Acha Rabbi Chanina Omer, Rabbi Acha Rabbi Chanina says, Siper, if he said Lashon Hara, Ein lo takana, I can't fix it. Because David already uprooted him from the world. David Amar said in Tehillim, Yachet Hashem kol siftei chalakot, Lashon deber tolot. What should he do so he shouldn't come to saying Lashon Hara? That's what you should learn Torah, or if you can't learn Torah, you should humble yourself. So Rabbi Chanina says, you spoke Lashon Hara, we can't help you. You've already brought destruction to the world. There's another pshat that's brought in the Medrash. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Re'eshe Leshona Shel Torah Ma Chaviva. See the tongue that speaks Torah, how fond it is before Hashem. Shem Rapeh Et HaLashon. Minayin, how do we know that that's what heals the tongue? Because the Pasuk says, Marpeh Lashon Etz Chaim. The Torah, which is Etz Chaim, heals the tongue. And it also opens the tongue, it loosens the tongue to allow him to speak. And then the Medrash goes on. The Medrash goes in different directions. Yeah.
If a father doesn't want to hit his son, is there other ways that he could hit his point across in a strong way?
Who said a father is allowed to hit his son nowadays? That's something we're going to discuss. Yeah, we're going to get to that.
But you said it, maybe he's not wrong.
Right. There are exceptions where a parent doesn't have a choice. But it's unclear whether today a person may hit his son at all or not. That's a disagreement between the rabbis. Or more accurately, there have been rabbis who said that one may not hit his son anymore today. I don't know if anyone came out against them. What was accepted until now was that people did. And what one rabbi has said, Rav Volba, said that today, I think it's Rav Volba, if I'm not mistaken, said that today we have seen so much bad that came out of that, that our generation isn't fit for that. The kids are not on the level that they used to be. We've reached such a low level that today, it's not right. That's what he says.
That's my question, because how I don't understand how, when the level is higher, why we are allowed to hit our children. That's something that I don't understand.
Today, God forbid, a kid might hit back.
Always a kid might hit back. It's Allah and Shulchan Aruch. Back in the time of the Gemara, a kid would hit back. We're talking about a kid that isn't capable physically of hitting back. A 2-year-old kid won't hit you back. A 4-year-old kid won't hit you back. If he hits you back, then at a time where it's right to hit him, you have to hit him again. But you have to know a few things about hitting kids. Hitting a child is something that has to be saved for a very, very rare situation, for things that are exceptional, and that is the only proper solution. In situations where that is the only proper solution, then that is the most proper solution. But there are instances where the proper solution is ignoring. There are instances where the proper solution is other things, such as telling the kid to go to sleep. Sometimes the child is overtired, and that's why he's misbehaving. A lot of it depends on the child, on the circumstance, but I would be very careful before a parent ever raises a hand on a child, because a parent has to know that he's right, and that he's measured correctly. And also, the point of hitting a child is not the strength of hitting him. A parent that hits a child with all his might has a problem. He may not hit his child. A parent is only allowed to hit his child if he does not hit him with all his might. If he hits him the amount that the child needs it, which is usually almost nothing. The idea is just that the child was hit. The idea is not the power of the hitting. The mere fact that a child was hit, that's an embarrassment, that hurts the child, that's the idea. And I would be very, very careful. I've seen too many instances where it backfired. I'm doubtful if a person is wise in hitting a child nowadays. I don't venture an opinion. People with more experience than me have said not to. Person has to really know what he's doing before he could hit a child. And make sure he knows the child. Not just what he's doing, but what the child's doing. Very often a father doesn't know. The mother knows.
So actually you're saying that we're on a low level, meaning that the parents don't know when to excuse the son.
It's a combination of factors. Once upon a time, there wasn't such an option as, I'll be Jewish, but I won't be religious. You go back 300 years, 400 years, that didn't exist. You're either Jewish or not Jewish. And you almost never found a person who said, I'm not going to be Jewish. I'm leaving the shtetl, I'm going to go with a non-Jew. It was a rarity. If a parent hit the child, so the child had no choice but to face up, hey, my parent is the boss and I did something wrong, so I have to fix it. Today, we live in a situation where a child could say, you hit me? Okay, I'm not putting on tefillin tomorrow morning. You hit me where it hurts, I'll hit you where it hurts. And this has been an all too common occurrence where children have done this. The parent hit the child and the child said, okay, I'm not davening, I'm not keeping Shabbos. And it's not something that happened in a day, but it is something that happened and has happened too many times. It's happened many, many, many times. And as a result of that, you have rabbis today, many rabbis today, who are saying, don't do it. Don't do it at all. Because the potential for loss far outweighs the potential for gain. Yeah?
I don't want to get too far sidetracked, but this seems, if this is a result, it seems the problem isn't hitting. The problem occurred long before the parent decided to hit the child, in the way that the parent, decided to reprimand.
I don't know, you don't have control. No, you don't have control over your kids. You could be 100% right, and the kid will answer you that answer. You have no control. Parents who have been 100% right, the child at the end of the day has b'chira chofshit. He has the choice to do what's positive, he has the choice to do what's negative. And today, he has a greater choice of doing what's negative. And as a result, you have to decide what tools is it wise for you to use in educating your child. Boils down to other factors as well. But that's one of the major ones. That the child will very easily say back, okay, I could hit back also.
But this comes back to my question, and also which I asked once before, but so then how do you, I mean, it's not enough to just say, well, you know, I don't want to turn him off to Judaism, so to being a Jew, so I'm going to let him decide everything for himself.
No, you don't let him decide everything for himself. For sure not. You help him, you guide him, you teach him, you love him, you go with him. A girl once asked me, what should a parent do if the child tells him, I want to go get an earring? A son says, I want to get an earring, I want to get a nose ring. And I told her, I think that the parent should say, I have to discuss it with your mother. If you decide that you're going to do it, then tell me, we'll go together, we'll find a good shop that's licensed, that they're going to do it properly, and we'll try to do it the proper way. Now obviously, this parent has to speak to his wife and find out where they went wrong and how they could help the child go right. But the parent also has to, once they've hit this point, go with the child. It'll shame the parent, it'll hurt the parent, but what's the alternative? The alternative is that the kid goes off and gets an earring at a shop where they don't have proper sanitation, and he could get AIDS, and he could get infections, and he could get all kinds of things. You don't want that. Even a kid that's going the wrong way is still your kid, and you want to help him out. But that doesn't mean that you tell a kid, do whatever you want. You want to get an earring, get an earring. No. Hopefully, as you bring up a child, you keep giving him overt and covert messages as to what's right and what's wrong. And you try to get him involved in positive things. And you try to get him in a school where he'll learn positive things and in an environment where he'll learn positive things. And you try to give him both positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement for both the positive and the negative things. As he grows up, certain things should be clear to him. And clear to him doesn't necessarily mean that you give a speech about it. It's clear to a child that you don't walk into a bathroom to eat breakfast, right? Why not? Why? Did you ever give him a speech about not eating breakfast in the bathroom? No. But there are certain things that are anathema to the child. By the same token, there are certain things that should be clear to a child. This is the way we live. We don't turn on a light on Shabbos. This isn't the question of a fight. Just like you don't fight me about, oh, you got me upset. I'm going to eat in the bathroom. Okay, now do something. You don't hear children saying that. Why do you hear children saying that about keeping Torah? Because they sense in our keeping of the Torah that that's a weak point. So that's where our weaknesses are also part of the weakness why we can't hit a child. If not keeping Shabbos were as clear and as important to us and as basic to us as the eating in a bathroom, then it would be second nature to a child. But we treat Shabbos as an external. When we come to Shabbos, we think, maybe there is a way I could get the lights to turn on and off, and maybe now it's cold, it's hot, I could get the air conditioning on. So there are halachos. There are things that are permitted and forbidden. The question is, what kind of atmosphere are you giving to the child? It's not just a question of what's permissible and what's not. It's a question of what are you giving over to the kid? There was a parent once who it was very important to him that his child wear a hand jacket for davening. The kid said, I can't find my hand jacket. The parent said, I'm going out to Mincha in 2 minutes. If you're not ready with your hand jacket, you're going to get a smack. And I was thinking to myself, what are you giving over to the kid? Why get a smack over such a thing? You're telling him hand jacket is so important. Maybe you should tell him that davening with kavana is so important. Tell him, look, so you won't find the hand jacket now. Don't forget, even though you'll be without the hand jacket, have kavana. It's so important. Don't forget that the hand jacket are just there to help us to focus on who we're standing before Hashem. It's a way of honoring Hashem. The main point, so now you could work more on putting honor inside. What if he would have reacted this way, what would he have told the kid? He would have told him the importance of the hand jacket. He would have told him the importance of kavana. And then, without fighting the hand jacket, he's really stuck it into the kid that even though he's without the hand jacket, make sure to honor the prayer, so tuck in your shirt better. So you can't honor the prayer all the way. Don't feel so bad. You can't find your hand jacket. Hashem will forgive you. You understand there are ways of going with the kid that you're giving him the same message in a more powerful way than when you're going head on. So by the parent telling him, you're going to get a smack if you don't find that hand jacket within 2 minutes, what did he do? He didn't really give the kid the message, the hand jacket is so important to Hashem, it's so important in your service to Hashem. He gave the kid the message, the hand jacket is important to me and I'm willing to hit you if you don't do it. He could have been much smarter and given it to the kid in an underhanded way where the kid would have gotten the message. So a parent has to think. And this parent was in a situation where he was very upset. When a parent is upset, he shouldn't do things.
Yeah, isn't this though the reason to learn? Because then if a parent knows what's important to him, then, presumably that's not the most important thing to have to be wearing a jacket. Maybe it was really important. But clearly it's more important to be a mincha than to be...
That parent had a reason why with this kid he was making such a fuss.
Mm-hmm.
He felt the kid was playing games with him.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, but even when a kid's playing games with you, you have
right.
to know what's...
if you get angry, it's a dangerous road.
Yeah, he lost. The parent lost.
Right.
At the end of the day, I know where they're holding 6-7 years later now. I know where things are holding. The parent lost.
That's something I learned when I was teaching is that... if you react to a kid, it's very, 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 very dangerous.
It doesn't mean you don't react.
Right.
It's just that you, so long as you're maintaining the calm and you're in control of yourself and you're thinking through what should be and what shouldn't be and you're thinking in the child's best interest, you're not reacting out of anger.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So then usually, if you think it through, you could hopefully get what's right. And a lot of it is really who we are. The kids sense who we really are. Like a kid once said, I don't get it. I turned on a light on Shabbos. My parents said, don't do it again. I broke a lamp. They went crazy. So what's more important, the value of the lamp or the value of Shabbos? They'll all tell me that Shabbos is more valuable. So how come when I turned on the light, they didn't go crazy? So kids sense where we really are. Doesn't mean we have to go crazy. We're saying it to them in many ways that we don't notice. Pasukei. Evil, the sinful fool, yin'atz musar aviv. He is disgusted with what his father tries to tell him, go the right way. V'shomer tochachat ya'arim. And the person who does maintain, he listens to the rebuke that he gets, he gains cunning from it. The person should try to listen when he's rebuked. What's the worst? Worst is they were wrong. But a smart person wants to listen. You listen and you retain it. You retain what someone tells you, you could gain from it. A guy once cursed me out. And it was one of the biggest gifts he could have given me. Because when someone hates your guts, and I didn't know he hated my guts, sat next to another for like 2 years. And then once, we had a mutual chavrusa who quoted me something he said. And I didn't know what he was talking about. So I told him, look, I don't know. I never heard of such a thing. So he went over to the other guy and he asked him where it was. So the other guy, it was so obvious, he was sure that I was playing games with him. So I said, no, I don't know. I never heard of such a thing. I don't know. Tell me, where does it say it? So he started cursing me out. What do you mean you don't know? Everyone knows this Rambam. For sure you know it. You're playing games. And then he started cursing. And when he was cursing, he made a mistake. I wasn't playing games. I really did not know where what he quoted was written. But to this day, I remember the things he said when he cursed me out. And it was so valuable. It was such a valuable lesson. It wasn't a pleasure to listen to it. It's not fun when someone curses you out. But if you think about it, then you could learn from it. Because you understand, hey, how's this person seeing me? Why is it that he hates my guts? Because he feels that I'm A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And maybe he's right. So I have to learn from that. David HaMelech said, Bikrov alai mereim, and people who harm me come near me, tishmano osnai, my ear listens. I'm interested in hearing what they have to say. It's true, they're cursing me out. They're not interested in my benefit. But at the end of the day, they're the ones that are going to find every little flaw I have, and they're going to come and say, oh, you're this and you're that. And they're right. They found the flaws that I have, so I should listen to them from them. I could learn. This pshat isn't my own. The Tiferes Yisrael says this pshat. That pasuk can tell. So, shomer tochachat, one who watches and retains rebuke that he gets, ya'arimo, he'll gain cunning from it. You learn from it. Yeah. No. David, it's until. Pasuk vav. Bet tzadik chosen rav, the house of a tzadik has great strength, great fortitude. Uvitvuat rasha ne'ekaret. And with the tremendous amount of grain that a rasha has, still there is ne'ekaret. There is murkiness. There is confusion, like achur. The house of the tzaddik, that's strong. It has good foundations, and therefore it will last. The rasha might have a lot of wealth, but ultimately there's fraud within, there's murkiness, there's confusion. You look at where it's all coming from, it's not going to last.
Bait means wife.
What?
Bait means wife.
Over here, bait means the home. It doesn't mean the house. I don't think so. Over here. Siftei chachamim yezaru dat, the lips of the chachamim. So one understanding over here is yezaru is like zer, like a crown. The lips of the chachamim will encrown with knowledge. Velev kesilim lochin, and the heart of the kesilim, of the fools, is not with good foundation. It's not truthful. So notice, regarding the chachamim, he spoke about their lips, what they say. Usually what people say has less foundation. He says, even what the chachamim say, that's a crown of knowledge. And the ksil, the fool, even what he thinks, even what's in his heart, that doesn't have good foundation. Another understanding over here, yezaru is to scatter. The lips of chachamim, they scatter knowledge. They give out, they teach everyone. I don't know, because I think lizra is the part of the root is the ayin. Then it would be yezar'u. Over here, it could be from the shorish of zore, which means to, you sift out the kernel from the chaff by throwing it into the wind. That's called ziriyah, without an ayin. The lips of Chachamim, they scatter out knowledge in what they say, and the heart of the fools, he doesn't have any such quest. He's not even interested in learning the knowledge when it's being given out. This is, it's interesting that our sages said that the Torah says, V'dibalta bam, one should talk only in Torah. And therefore our sages said, if you see a Talmud Chacham speaking, and he's not talking Torah, so listen to what he's saying, you could learn from it. When a Talmud Chacham speaks, even if he's speaking and he's not talking in Torah, so how could he be talking non-Torah? Must be there's something you could derive from what he's saying. Maybe it's their hurts, maybe it's the way he has to treat someone, or something else, but you could learn something from it. Yeah.
It's also it seems the juxtaposition that the even the lips of the Talmud Chacham are connected to wisdom, which is the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas even that his lips and his heart are one, whereas the heart of a Rasha, not even there, there's no wisdom, there's no theory.
Yeah, I agree. Zevach Reshaim, Pasuk Chet. Zevach Reshaim, the offering of the sacrifice of Reshaim to Avat Hashem is disgusting before Hashem. Utfilat Yesharim, in the prayer of those that are straight, Ritzono, that is God's will. So Zevach Reshaim to Avat Hashem has halachic implications. They say that if a person Zevach Hashem to Avat Hashem, person can't do things that are sinful and bring sacrifices. Hashem says Zevach Hashem toiva, the sacrifices of Rasham, Hashem says they are toiva. Yesharim, notice that opposite Rasha'im we have Yesharim. Who were called Yesharim? The Avos were called Yesharim because the Avos, they were straight. And what were they straight in? They accepted people the way they were. They said, you could serve Hashem this way, you could serve Hashem that way. So long as you're within the confines of what's right, there's more than one path that's right. And that's called Yashal, that's called the person that's straight.
The Zevach HaShe'im, Zevach only means sacrifice? Zevach means any kind of slaughter.
The Ramban in our parsha says that Zevach means any kind of slaughtering. But ordinarily we understand that Zevach is a sacrifice.
So, like it's not, they're not sacrificing for Hashem, they're sacrificing for themselves. Zevach HaShe'im, lo Zevach HaShem.
No, the Chazal understood this pasuk that Zevach HaShe'im is speaking about when they offered to Hashem, like Balak and Bilam, they offered sacrifices to Hashem, but they themselves were Hashem. Yeah.
Is this connected to tshuva? Because the connection between Rasha and the recognition of Ra could be connected to being to Yasharim.
What do you mean? I didn't follow.
In order to. Well, in order to, I guess, in just the understanding of good and evil, and is it, for someone to be straight, that he has to recognize also, like you said, what the different ways of avodat Hashem that's within the confines, but also what's without the confines.
I guess I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure it has to be that way. I'm not sure a person has to know the confines. He has to know that his way is right. I'm not sure he has to know that every person has to know the confines. If you say that, then what you're really saying is that in order for a person to be yeshar, he has to be talmid chacham, which is true to an extent, but I'm not sure to which extent.
Okay.
I'm not sure every person has to know the exact confines. The person has to know that his path is right. It's to find the right path for him.
I mean, I guess my question in a simple way is there a connection between Rasha and Yasha? It's the same letter?
Almost. They're in an opposite order, though.
I don't know. I think the pasuk is stressing that the rasha seems to be doing something more. He's bringing a zevach. He paid money. He brought an animal. He took the time. He brought a sacrifice. The pasuk says at the end of the day, if he's a rasha, Hashem says that's disgusting. Even after all his investment, and the yeshar, the person who's straight. That is not necessarily the biggest tzaddik, but he's straight. So, even his prayer, God says, I like that. A person doesn't necessarily have to look for the most expensive way of serving Hashem. But if he's straight, and he's going the right way, then Hashem says, I like his prayer. Yeah?
The connection between the two pasukim?
I don't know.
Siftei Chachamim, and that's a place of prayer.
I don't know. The whole perek seems to be focused on speech. I don't know. It begins with soft spokenness and then speaks about speaking in a way that enhances the wisdom and then speaks about a loose tongue. The perek seems to be focused on speech. I don't know. To'avat Hashem derech rasha, pasuk tet, Hashem is disgusted with the way of the rasha. Umradev tzedakah yehav, and one who seeks out tzedakah, Hashem loves him. And here we see the concept that Shlomo is going to reiterate. It's not enough that one performs tzedakah, one has to seek out tzedakah. A person has to be rodev tzedakah. A person has to chase after tzedakah. It's not enough that a person says, well, I don't see what's going on in Bosnia. I don't see that there are hungry people in the north. A person has to seek it out. He has to say, wait a second, there are bombs falling in the north. Probably people need help there. So let me find out what people need, how I could help them. A person has to be rodif tzedakah. We're going to see that time and again. Pasuk Yud, Musar Ra Lo Zev Orach. There are going to be Musar Ra, Yisurim, afflictions and painful, bad afflictions to a person who is Ozev Orach. He leaves the path. Sonei Tochachat Yamut. A person who hates rebuke ends up dead because he never finds out what's right. And the Rambam says there are certain things that prevent a person from doing tshuva. And one of them is when a person doesn't like rebuke. A person doesn't like rebuke. So how could anyone ever tell him he's wrong? And he'll never know to change his ways. And that's one of the things that detain a person from ultimately doing tshuva.
Isn't it our nature to not like rebuke?
Okay, a person's supposed to overcome that nature. And there are levels in not liking rebuke. Okay, I think we're going to call it a night here.